So, in our first class, we discussed the first concept of God. We discussed the idea that there's something outside the set of life the way we know it, logic the way we know it. And we began with that, without attributing any religion or any connection between God and the world. We began by just understanding why we would even think there is a God. And we took a very secular approach to it. Then we discussed a little bit about the tradition, the written tradition, the Torah, the oral tradition, right? We divided our class into two sections, which are supposed to fuse and then to one. We then went on to discuss also the great revelation at Sinai, right? And we discussed call them proofs, be it the man coming down for 40 years, or the Jews traveling the desert, or the Jews leaving Egypt. We said that we have to define our terms, meaning we said really you don't know if the milk you're drinking is poisoned. There are a lot of things you don't know 100%. And we said that whenever we approach this, we have to define for ourselves what level, what percentage of truth we have to get to, what percentage of clarity do we accept as truth. I mean, you don't doubt that the water is not poisoned. You don't doubt that the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow. Yet none of those are proven 100%. We live all of our life based on a certain percentage, which we treat as 100%. We said that when it comes to religion, very often people search for that 100%, which they don't search for in anything else in life. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu had a time machine. Maybe. But we don't know of anyone else having a time machine. So before we encounter that, maybe we should ask ourselves if the milk we're drinking is poisoned, because we know that Coca-Cola bottles have been poisoned, and we know that other food items have been poisoned, and yet we're not concerned in all of our life. We're very certain that the food we're eating is good. We get medication from the pharmacist, we take it. We don't say, maybe the pharmacist got confused. Every year, pharmacists get confused. And yet, when it comes to religion, we ask, but maybe Moshe Rabbeinu had a time machine, yet there has never been a time machine invented yet. No one's gone back. People can go forward, no one's gone back. So in religion, we suddenly ask questions we wouldn't ask anywhere else, and that's why we said we have to define what our criterion for truth is. And we gave an example, we gave the story of the guy who shut his eyes at the traffic light and said, God, if you're there, so give me a sign. And he opens his eyes, and there's a truck in front of him, G-O-D, guaranteed overnight delivery, and then the guy has to ask himself, well, wait a second, what did I want? When I said, God, reveal yourself, what did I want? You know, we said if someone would walk in and give us prophecy, then we'd think he's crazy. We wouldn't listen to him. And if we got prophecy, chances are we'd go to an insane asylum or a psychiatrist. So what do we want? Meaning what level, what do we want? When we approach the question, we have to ask ourselves. We also gave another point of introduction, and that is that you won't necessarily get all the answers in one day or in one sitting or in one month or in one year. And that's partially because we are very limited to our perspective, to our understanding, to our capacity. An answer might be true, and yet it won't resonate with us. And so we said you have to also find the answers that resonate with you. We said there are many ways to the top of the mountain. You don't have to follow one path or another. There are many paths that are legitimate. You guys remember all this? So far, we're okay? Okay. So that's just a quick overview of what we discussed the previous two sessions.
Could you explain that idea a little bit more about going many paths up the top of the mountain?
Yeah. There are different approaches in Judaism to understanding the idea of God creating the world and God giving us the mitzvos. There are different paths within Judaism that stress different things. And Maimonides' approach is not identical to the Kuzari's approach, which is not identical to Ramchal's approach, which is not identical to Nachmanides' approach, which is not identical to the Ibn Ezra's approach. So you have different approaches, and none of them are identical to the Sefer HaKarim, Rav Yosef Elbow's approach. And yet, they're all getting to the same place.
But they're all within the community of people who recognize the Torah. And
correct.
Like, when once you're at, like, you're
they're
not,
all climbing
like
the same mountain.
You're not. You're
right.
climbing a different mountain.
Right. There comes a point when we say the person's climbing a different mountain. This isn't our mountain.
Right.
But we said that sometimes you hear something and it just doesn't resonate with you. And that's not necessarily to detract of what you heard. And that's not necessarily to detract of you. It could be that this doesn't resonate with you. And that's legitimate. Not every idea is going to resonate with each person. So we have to search. And you don't necessarily have to find the answers in this class. Could be you have to go somewhere else. Could be you have a rabbi that speaks and it makes more sense to you or feels better for you. So this is just a starting point. So
not
far,
all of those answers have what? To be true, though, right?
Oh, so the word true really deserves a broader discussion. What is true? But today I want us to start somewhere else. We're going to go a little bit out of order. Did we discuss yet the story of the cat in the subway? No.
Is that the one in New York that happened a few weeks ago? Or is that something different?
It's in New York, but it's about 15 or 18 years ago.
Okay. There was a story with the cat. And they shut down the New York subway system for a few hours because there were like kittens in the,
right.
in the tracks and they couldn't move them.
Right, so that's the story in a nutshell from 18 years ago. I didn't know
it happened
again.
A few weeks ago, yeah.
Okay, so about 18 years ago, a cat walked into the tracks, and someone ran to the conductor of the subway train. It was rush hour. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And he said to him, "You can't move the train. There's a cat there. And if you do, I'm going to sue." So the conductor is frozen. What's he supposed to do? He calls his boss, the manager, and he says, "What am I supposed to do?" Now, the manager knows, just like the conductor, how many people are on average in New York subway train?
A lot.
How many? What are we talking about? 1,500? What?
That's a rough estimate.
In the range of 1,500. You have, okay? Now, you have another train behind that in the tunnel waiting to come to the station, another train behind that. So, if you stop a train, you're stopping, in essence, you're stopping at least 10,000 people right away. You stop it long enough, you could be stopping 1 million people. You stop it even longer, you could be stopping 3 million people. So the conductor freezes, he calls the manager. Now he knows that if he makes the wrong move, he's in trouble. He's lost his job and maybe more. So why should he bite the bullet? Calls the manager. The manager does the same calculation. He calls the supervisor. Supervisor figures the same thing. What's he supposed to do? He's going to bite the bullet? No way. And so it keeps going up. Now there are the train sitting at the tracks.
Why doesn't somebody just move the cat?
Oh, so the cat went in. And you, on the subway, you got to go in a way you don't get electrocuted, right? Not so simple. Or run over. So this. Now you have to ask, realize there are thousands of people whose children are waiting to be picked up at home. They have responsibilities. They have responsibilities. There could be a nurse on that train, a doctor on that train, parents on that train. Everyone's going somewhere, and they have to get there. But they're all waiting because there's a kitten on the tracks.
People
so
keep this guy up.
The people didn't know why they weren't moving. But it, in a nutshell, as it bumped up the notches, you know, as it went up the ladder, finally they said, send someone in there and catch the cat and get the cat out and move the train. But the whole subway system was detained by over a half hour. So you had millions of people whose lives were harshly affected that day. So this hit the radio. So you're telling me this happened a few weeks ago.
I'll have to look up the details. I just read a piece about it. It was in the context of the mayoral election. And somebody was referring to it and I think said we need a mayor with the kind of guts to just call and tell the train to run over the cat.
To run over the cat.
That was this writer's opinion.
Okay, so that's interesting. So this, in my day, this goes back 18 years ago. When this happened, you had 2 or 3 days where the media was buzzing with the question, what's the right decision? Are they supposed to move or not? And you had people calling in saying, you know, if all those 3 million people got together, they couldn't bring back the life to the cat. Life is so precious. How could you run over a cat? And then you had other people saying, what do you mean? It's a cat. We need to move. We eat meat. You could eat a dog. You could eat a cat. You can. So, of course, you got to move. And so the debate was raging. I want to pause and maybe go over to another story, an interesting story. Okay, maybe I'll tell you two different stories. One is the story of a student that came to Mechon Meir and declared himself an atheist, an agnostic.
After going to Mechon Meir?
Well, before. Then the story is interesting. And he would spend classes asking excellent questions. One day, he joined me on the trip to Kohav Yaakov. So we get on the bus, and I said to him, you know, you keep asking me questions. I want to go the other route now, okay? Let's say there is no God, and let's say there is no religion. I want to ask you, what ethical, moral system is there? He said, what do you mean? I said, I want to understand why at the end of this conversation I shouldn't eat you for lunch. So he said, it's unhealthy. I said, I don't understand. Why could you eat animals and you can't eat people? So he said, well, people are a higher life form and doesn't fit. I said, fine, so eat retarded people. So he said, no, it's unhealthy. It's been proven that people who eat retarded people, it's very, who eat... so I said, so if it were healthy, then it would be okay. I mean, if we discover that this would be...
It's the new superfood.
Right, it's the new superfood. That then would be okay. So he said, no. I said, why? What's, you know, is it cruel? What's cruel? What's evil? Well, we'll do it in a painless way. Who said life is better than death? Is there logic? Can you prove it? And even if you'll be able to prove it, so I'll just ask... Let's not kill people. But people die every day. Why don't we turn them into sausages? You know, we have meat factories. Make good use. Why bury the dead? If we're going to... Let's go the other route. Let's leave Judaism out of the picture. You keep saying, you don't know, there is no God, you don't need Judaism, you don't need a religion. Fine. So I just want to understand, why is it that when a person dies, we don't fire up the mangal, you know, turn up the... And make a barbecue, right? There are societies that do that, sure. So, why not?
What brought this student to... Do you know what brought him to Mechon Meir in the first place? Because it seems kind of strange that he would... what he said his reason was for coming?
I just want to take it down the road. I'm saying we spent the whole bus ride. I was wondering, the people sitting around me, like, what were they thinking? You know, what kind of person am I, right? Here I am.
No, it just seems strange to me that he would have, you know, he obviously must have wanted something.
He wanted something, yeah. But I said before, instead of putting me on the defensive, prove to me Judaism is right, I want to understand what else is right. Is there anything in your life that you can define as good, as correct? You're asking me, so I want to ask you. Let's take one bus ride. Let's just do it the other way. Okay? So we'll pause that story. I don't think we have to get back to it, even though it's like...
What did he say?
At some point he said, you're confusing me. I said, okay, when you have it clear, I'm willing to talk.
So he wasn't an intellectually honest.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. I think that, you know, he had what to think about. You don't always have the answers at your fingertips. I wouldn't say that. Let's go on to the third story. So, I get the following email. A woman writes, she's a doctor in Australia, and she's following classes in Mechon Meir, and she escapes Shabbos to a degree, but she feels wholly uninspired. Why does she feel uninspired? Because she has colleagues who are excellent doctors as well, and they also are kind, good, ethical people. So she's not sure why she's any better than anyone else. Like, there's an ethical system out there that's seems to be fine. So I emailed back a question. I said, I'll skip a bunch of questions, but you understand I had a bit of a background in order to know that to ask this question. I understood she was a caring doctor, a kind doctor. I said, can you tell me, at the end of the shift on a Thursday afternoon, when everyone wants to go home for the weekend, are there times when you know there are patients that have certain needs and you stick around to ensure that they get the care they need? Sometimes it means looking over their blood work so that the weekend doesn't pass without a doctor looking it over. Sometimes it means taking one more look at a patient. So she writes back, yes. I said, and when you look at your colleagues, isn't it true that in their mind, if they have a pet dog waiting at home, there's no difference between the patient and the dog? So she writes back, you're right. They say it openly, that they're not sure that they're doing any more than the vet is doing. I said, okay, so doesn't that also come to play in the practice? I'm saying, look around you. If if really, you know, the human being there has nothing sacred to it, if there is no soul and there is no God, and then it's all a matter of life, so then, okay, so you're a little bit ahead in the food chain, you're a little bit ahead in evolution, but nothing too special, nothing too spectacular, nothing holy. And I'm sure that if you look at the way you treat patients and how you handle certain crunch times, or I would like to think if maybe your team made a mistake and there's an ethical decision about whether you stand by your comrades or you're honest and you do what's really ethical, I would like to think that the fact that you're a God-fearing person pushes you in the right direction. And she wrote back, yes, you know, she wrote back that now she's starting to understand the difference and why it does make a difference, whether you're a religious doctor or not. She says in the conversations, they keep pushing the idea that they're also ethical. But taking these examples, she suddenly started looking at the service she's giving and the service they're giving. And I ended with one point. I said, you know, if you think about the idea that you're serving a creature who has God's soul within him, then you're going to elevate the work you do and the care you give people. If there's no difference between the human patient and the dog, then you're giving different care. And if there is a difference, then you'll see that you will view your job differently, and you will view your patients differently, and you will view your relationship with your comrades differently. And she wrote back after a period saying, yeah, that's true. So we're starting from a completely different angle this time. Whereas the previous times, we always started with logic, 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 secular logic, and we basically left Judaism out of it. This time, I think we have to shift a little bit to the other side of the table and say, wait a second. It's not just a question of what's right. This question will define many decisions in life.